Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Podcast on the Brink. Recording this actually on Thursday night, just a little bit more than an hour past Indiana's impressive 67-51 victory over Ohio State. And to break it down with me, I've got Ryan Carrazza, author of The Minute After and Film Session, also an Inside the Hall co-founder. Ryan, welcome back to Podcast on the Brink.
Okay. This is a true post-game show for us tonight, so let's do it.
Yeah. We were just talking a little bit before that it's nice to have a positive, arguably probably the best Mike Woodson Indiana game so far. Not to say that everything has maybe been as doom and gloom as some have kind of, you know, the tone, I guess, of the fan base following the Penn State loss wasn't particularly great. You know, we saw it in some of the reaction that we get to our stories and social media. Obviously, there was some frustration just kind of based on the fact that Indiana was only able to muster, I think, 58 points up at Penn State. Tonight, a much better effort. Not a full 40-minute game, but I thought for the last about 30, 32 minutes, Indiana thoroughly outplayed Ohio State. Ryan, just looking at you look at the games as closely as anybody, you're breaking, you go back and watch and kind of pick up on things. And I'm sure you're going to dive into some different themes when you do go back and watch this game from a film session standpoint. But offensively, Indiana, you know, they still didn't break the 1 point per possession mark tonight, but I thought they were much better offensively tonight than what we saw over the weekend in State College.
Oh, without a doubt. And I mean, the word that kind of just kept popping up during the game for me was just variety, right? It wasn't a pounded in the Trace Jackson Davis, his back to the basket every time he touches the ball, everyone else standing around or just not getting an advantage anywhere else on the court, like pretty much the whole game, whether it be ball screens, whether anything they're trying to run off the ball and kind of just not getting an advantage tonight. I mean, a lot of people said this. I think the biggest thing was Trey Galloway's return. I think he was like absolutely essential and just changing like the dynamic, the character and the energy offensively on the court. And I think transition wise, it was probably the biggest thing for Indiana. They outscored Ohio State 17-7 in fast break points. Galloway had a lot to do with that. He had a couple steals and he just gets out and goes. And I think what has been frustrating, I think, for fans to watch, especially in this Penn State game and some of the other contests this season, is when you don't get out in transition, you give yourself, especially how Indiana has been playing offensively, you don't give yourself the opportunity just for like easy, quick scores, right? If you get out in transition and you don't have five defenders to go against, things can just come easier. Things can come differently. And I think that happened more frequently tonight and it just kind of opened everything up. And the defense kind of fed into the offense, which I think is also another way to kind of change the dynamic instead of just kind of pounding it into TJD. So yeah, he was big. And then there were other, guys that I think maybe they didn't score a ton, but it was what they did and how they did it, when they scored and when they contributed to the offense that was big. You know, Miller Kopp and Parker Stewart were only 1 of 8 from deep, and Stewart was the only one that he was 1 of 5, and I think Kopp was 0 of 3. So they weren't hitting from deep, and I think there's been a lot of criticism with them as starters that it's like, well, if they're not hitting 3-point shots and they're kind of average defenders, you know, what are they really bringing to the court out there? If that's the case, if they're not hitting shots and they're just kind of being average defenders. But I think tonight the difference was that, you know, they did more. I think earlier in the first half, like Parker Stewart drove to the basket, got into the lane and scored. Miller Kopp, I did that as well. I can't remember if it was the end of the first half or in the second half, but he also drove and scored. Miller Kopp also hit one of his like baseline runners after faking out of the corner, which is something I feel like I'm not sure he's hit one of those since the Syracuse game, honestly, or even attempted one of those. Right. So it's like those guys were countering and doing something different tonight in a way that they've been so one dimensional that it hasn't really benefited IU's offense or added any kind of dynamic action to it. So it was just a different vibe offensively spurred on by Galloway and some of these other complementary pieces stepping up and doing more and being more active for IU tonight for sure.
Yeah. With Kopp and Stewart in particular, it wasn't like they had a huge impact in terms of points and shot attempts, but they were at least a little bit more involved. And I think that was the main criticism that a lot of people had coming out of the Penn State game. It was early in this game, it seemed to be a lot of standing around and waiting on Trayce Jackson Davis to do something. And this obviously was still a really big Trayce Jackson Davis game, 27 points, took 17 shots, 5 of 6 from the free throw line, 12 rebounds, 5 block shots. I mean, the definite MVP of the game, but you know, it can't be just him carrying them night in and night out. And I think the thing with Kopp and Stewart was at least they were a threat. You know, they didn't necessarily shoot the ball well. I think they were combined 4 of 14 from the field, but at least they were involved. And do you think that's something like moving forward that there's more variety of ways to get them involved? Or do you think that they're maybe just so one-dimensional as players that it's going to be tough to get them to do this on a consistent basis?
Well, the thing about it is it doesn't have to be some high usage rate, some all of a sudden their shot volume are going up a ton and all of a sudden they're doing all of this different stuff. I think it just has to me, they have to be able to like do more than just catch and shoot on occasion. Right. Because I think if you like the film session I did out of that Syracuse game, Miller Kopp, like, he has counters when the defense is playing him to shoot the three. Right. And yes, they're not always going to work. And yes, teams can still stay in front of him and defend. And that has happened in other games when he has tried to, like, if somebody runs him off the line and then he'll kind of dribble in, other players can stay with him because he's not the quickest player. But it's like, you have to at least be able to show or prove you can do a little bit more to not have the defense just cover you one way all the time. And so I don't necessarily think Parker Stewart and Miller Kopp are, you know, going to be able to be, you know, really expand their games. I think in some ways they are who they are, but being who they are, I mean, you look at Parker Stewart, obviously, like, you know, the schedule UT Martin was playing was a little bit different than a Big Ten schedule, right? But he can do more than just shoot, right? And I think that makes him that much more important and of a threat. And I know he's, you know, he was shooting, I'm not quite sure what he's at now. He was shooting, you know, 49% from three a little bit earlier in the season. What is he at now? I'm looking this up on the fly.
45.3.
Yeah. He's, you know, he's taken 64 attempts and he's still shooting 45% from three. So it's like defenses are going to key on that. And if he can just keep them honest, if he can hit a couple mid-range shots by if he's getting off the line or just do a tiny bit of playmaking like he did in the first half, there was like, I think like a side pick and roll with him and Trayce Jackson Davis. where he passed and assisted on a Trace Jackson Davis score. So it's like that little counter stuff that if you're getting defended one way and just kind of being able to do a little bit something different and key and change a little bit how the defense is kind of shading you, I think is kind of like all they need to do, because they're still good shooters and they need to be on the floor because of that, but they can't just be that.
Our friends at Homefield produce the world's most comfortable premium licensed collegiate apparel out of their headquarters in Indianapolis. Run by IU grads, Homefield studies Indiana's history to come up with the most unique apparel designs available for Hoosier fans anywhere. Our current favorites at Podcast on the Brink are the 1987 National Champs t-shirt commemorating IU's last national championship and the vintage 1965 Indiana University Bison t-shirt. And it's not just Indiana apparel available at Homefield. They're constantly adding new schools to the over 120 currently available at homefieldapparel.com. Podcast on the Brink listeners can save 15% off of your first purchase by using code BRINK15 during checkout at homefieldapparel.com. Right. No, I mean, I guess what I was kind of thinking was, you look at this, I've got Indiana's KenPom page pulled up right now, and Stewart and Kopp, Stewart's taken 64 threes, 45.3%. Kopp has taken 43, 37.2%. So they're the two highest in terms of volume, 3-point shooters on the team, and they have the two best percentages. So you look at some of the other guys, you know, Tamar Bates has taken 33 threes and only 33.3%. Xavier Johnson's taken 26, 34.6. So I guess, you know, the only thing I'm thinking is are there ways for Indiana offensively to maybe generate more looks for them? But again, it's also dependent on how teams adjust to defend them. And I think one thing that teams have gotten better at is as they've scouted Indiana, is to not, when there's rotations in terms of double teaming Trace Jackson Davis, that they're sending the help from different places so that they don't leave Kopp and Stewart on the perimeter. I think that's one thing that Indiana's going to, you know, I think there's an argument to try to get Kopp and Stewart more shot attempts moving forward, just because Indiana, I think, is going to have to make more threes on a consistent basis. They're not going to win a ton of games like they did tonight, only shooting 2 of 15 from three.
You know, I see what you're saying. I think going along with that, I feel like often the entry pass to Trace Jackson Davis is coming from Xavier Johnson, right? Because he's bringing the ball up the court. He's got the ball in his hands a lot. He is their dominant playmaker, right? And so when that happens and he's kind of doing it either, you know, I often feel like when it's happening in the half court, he's maybe a little bit right slot, like right wing, and he's entering it into Trace Jackson Davis. The double is coming off of Xavier Johnson's, you know, his man is digging down. And so when they kick out, it's like Xavier Johnson's open, but to like have to, like, if he, and at times they've like tried to swing it to a Stewart or a Kopp that's either top of the key or left wing, but they're covered because their man, to your point, their man is not going down on the double. So it is kind of one of those things where if they can get more creative about how they're entering the ball or how they're getting Trace Jackson Davis the ball and where he's getting the attention, that might help free them up for looks for their shooters. And, you know, I know, you know, Xavier Johnson was shooting a little bit better percentage earlier in the season and it's dipped down. But the reality is, if he can hit, you know, he's at 34.6% now, even if that drops to 32-30, if he can stay around there, 32-33, it's not terrible, right? I think, but at the end of the day, you want your guys that are shooting 45% and 37% at that higher volume to be getting those looks.
Yeah, I agree with you. I want to talk about Trace Jackson Davis. Obviously, his game tonight was very impressive. And I've kind of wondered with him, you know, he's put up stats for Indiana now. This is his third season, but a lot of really good stats on teams that haven't won. And I think this year is really kind of important for him to, you know, if it's going to be his last season in Bloomington, we don't know what lies ahead. But, you know, I feel like in many ways this season, the most important stat for him is wins and losses. And tonight I think is notable in that he put up the stat line against, you know, a top 15 team and outplayed a guy that's sitting atop right now, the KenPom player of the year standings, and EJ Liddell. I mean, he totally outplayed him tonight and got the best of that matchup. Trace Jackson Davis, I'm curious, Ryan, tonight was that maybe the best you've seen him play in terms of his impact on winning? And I thought the most maybe impressive part was just how he bounced back from the performance against Penn State, where Mike Woodson, you know, I listened to the post game radio show the other night, and you know, Woodson just came right at Trace in terms of his rebounding effort. And tonight he responds and gets 12 rebounds and 27 points and the 5 block shots. I mean, the block shots this season are definitely like a new wrinkle to his game. I think a lot of it is just the freedom that he has to kind of, you know, maybe go out of his area and challenge shots, so something he didn't have previously under the pack line defense. But he's just been, you know, a big part of what Indiana's been able to do defensively. And tonight I thought he did it on both ends of the court. And it felt more like one of those earlier season performances where he was out there playing hard at all times. And at times, I think recently it more or less seemed like maybe he was going through the motions for small amounts of time, but tonight it felt like for the most part he was engaged for all 34 minutes and was the best player on the court, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think in terms of Big Ten games, this certainly is up there in terms of performances. Obviously, earlier this year, you know, he had, what was that total points that he had? He had 43 like points. 40, against, yeah, yeah. He had 43 against Marshall. But in some ways, the ease of which at times he was going around defenders and just sort of like dunking on people all game was a little reminiscent of that. But yeah, to your point about the defense, I feel like it's interesting in that really his whole career so far at Indiana, blocks has not really been something he's really been known for. And I think that just is scheme, right? Like, under Archie Miller, in the pack line, I think it was a type of system that they were not funneling drivers to, you know, well, Trace Jackson, if someone did come in a lane, Trace wasn't like leaving an area and the defense wasn't being funneled to like allow him to block shots, right? That's just not like what the pack line is. And I think now that the defense is different, it is showing a little bit more of a dynamic presence that he can have as a shot blocker, you know. And this is another thing I think in some senses, I think against Penn State, you know, some of the commentary was, well, if he's leaving his area, that is one, you know, if maybe there's like a quick dump off or whatever. But I think for the, by and large, like his ability to block shots has been like a huge positive, even if maybe a time every here and there it's been countered a little bit. And I mean, Indiana's rim defense has just Ohio State only scored 10 points in the paint tonight, just 10. The Indiana was just completely dominant and really without fouling. And so I think, yeah, on games when Trace Jackson Davis is not, you know, I think too, like energy wise with him, it's interesting. Like there are those games and, you know, we have enough evidence with him over his career now where like, he can just seem really bogged down and sort of like almost like frustrated with like how much he has to do in games. And that has just been emblematic of the Indiana Hoosiers during his tenure on the team, because he hasn't had a lot of help on offense, right? There hasn't been a point guard that's been able to make life easier for him and has really made other players better and has been like a scoring dynamic point guard. And he's so good, like you have to give him a lot of looks. So I think, again, the difference between this game and the Penn State game is yes, if you look at the rest of the team, it wasn't like the numbers really jump off the page tonight, but they were doing enough. There was enough else. And the way it wasn't just the same thing, like every possession, right? Because they got on transition and got some easier looks because of how other guys stepped up and basically moved more, cut more, played harder, tried some different stuff. It just kind of frees him up to still be super dominant, but not have to be super dominant and be the only thing running for Indiana. I think those are the differences for this team and for him. It's about getting some more help so that he can still, I mean, they should still be giving him the ball a lot because he's a great player, but it shouldn't, that can't be all that it is with everyone else's energy dead. Right. And I think that's kind of the path forward for Indiana offensively is just to be able to get some more movement, some other stuff going. There's enough else here that I think he can get that help if other guys are able to kind of just step up a little bit more and they're able to just have some more creativity overall and do things, you know, like transition, that's just easier buckets. If they can just lighten his load enough, I think he can keep that high energy and keep being dominant without just being overworked.
One of the other things, obviously, that was much different from the Penn State game and some of the other close losses that Indiana had this season, Trey Galloway was in the game and making a huge impact. And he plays 19 minutes. You know, he obviously has not played since the St. John's game. 19 minutes, 3 of 5 from the field, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 steals. He's a plus 17. You know, I know we don't always look at plus minus, but you know, you look at the numbers tonight and it really shows that to me, looking at the box score, that's a pretty big number. His impact on the game tonight, undeniable. I mean, I just, his energy and the little things that he does really, I thought, changed the game when he came in. What do you think? I guess a two-part question. Do you think this is sustainable from Galloway? Not necessarily this type of production, because I don't necessarily think he's going to have a line quite like that on a consistent basis. But in terms of what he brings, do you think it's sustainable? And the second part, I'm just curious, in terms of the hierarchy off the bench, how does this get now sorted out? Because Tamar Bates tonight only gets 4 minutes. Anthony Leal didn't get on the court at all. Do you see this as a situation where, kind of moving forward, that those two guys are really going to be looking up at Trey Galloway and trying to defend him off for minutes? Because it seems to me like a game like tonight can really kind of cement his spot in the rotation moving forward, and those guys may have a little bit more difficulty finding minutes from here on out.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we think back on the rotation back when, you know, he got hurt, which it's been about 2 months now, I think, you know, he was getting some pretty significant minutes off the bench. And I think what he offers is he kind of plays point guard at times, right? Like, there are possessions when he's bringing the ball up the court or he's kind of controlling things offensively. And I think you couple that with just him kind of making things happen out of nowhere sometimes. And it's, again, just sort of that spark that he brings that I think is super important. And I think it's sustainable in terms of his effort and energy being consistent. I think he's always been a player like that. I think if we look back at his freshman season, I think early in the year, I think even it was the first game of the season, you know, he got a couple kind of like breakaway steals and scores and such. And I think as the Big Ten season kind of rolled along, he still was like getting to the basket, but I think his confidence of scoring against length and just kind of either trying to draw a foul, he wasn't quite there yet on that. So he could still kind of draw defenders, get to the basket, but not really do much when he got there. And it's possible, you know, this year that may change a little bit more if he can, you know, continue to stay in the court and do what he does. I think, you know, it is, if we were to sit here and say that, you know, Tamar Bates is really hasn't really been a factor much of all of late. I know, you know, and I'm certainly not going to sit here and speculate on a teenager's personal life, but I know it was a comment that Mike Woodson made, I think on his, on the radio show on Monday evening, that he'd been dealing with some personal issues. So maybe that plays into it a bit. And Tamar Bates though is more of like that pure scorer, right? And it's possible that could kick back up at some point and he can score a bunch of baskets in a hurry. And so, you know, he's a freshman. It sort of remains to be seen, but I think I think even Archie Miller really trusted Galloway too. I think the Miller and Woodson really, really trust what Trey Galloway brings to the court. And again, even if the stats don't jump off at you, it's just what he brings and sort of like just kind of that winning mentality that I think the coaches have really gravitated towards. And I don't see that going away for Trey Galloway, even if it, you know, doesn't always come to fruition at the height of the level it did in tonight's game.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I agree with you. One other thing I wanted to just mention. You talked about the points in the paint. I think you said Indiana only allowed 10 points in the paint, which is incredible against a team like Ohio State. Although Ohio State does take a lot of threes, but they took 27 threes in the game, made 8, well below their percentage. So Indiana obviously deserves credit for guarding the three-point line much better than they did at Penn State. But I was just looking at Indiana's KenPom page right now and filtering to conference only. And I know it's a small sample size. It's only 4 of 20 conference games. But right now Indiana's I think some other games going on tonight. So I don't know if these numbers will be changed at all by the time this podcast goes live. But 0.88 points per possession Indiana's allowing. They have the best defense right now in the Big Ten. They're only the 11th best offense right now, 0.96 points per possession. But their margin, the efficiency margins is solid for obviously a team that's only 2-2 in league play. But some of the other numbers, I mean, their 2-point field goal percentage in league play, 40.2%. They're only allowing their first and opponent free throw rate. A lot of good things this team's doing defensively. And you just look at the number of points they've given up in their four games. They gave up 51 tonight, obviously only 61 at Penn State, only 64 at Wisconsin in that loss, and only 55 to Nebraska. So as much as we were, you know, sold on this Archie Miller defense the previous four seasons, Mike Woodson has come in and made this look pretty easy from a defensive perspective here through four games in Big Ten play. How surprised are you at just how good this defense was tonight and just overall so far in Big Ten? You know, those numbers are pretty indisputable just in terms of how good Indiana has been on that end of the court early on in league play.
Yeah. And, you know, to not even look specifically at conference play, I mean, if you take that off and just look at it as a whole, on their 2-point defensive percentage is 38.7, which is number one in the country right now. Their effective field goal percentage of defense, you know, is at 40.9, which is third best in the country. You know, even their block percentage nationally is 16th. I think in Big Ten only it's second. And then they moved from, I think they started this game, they were 13th in adjusted defensive efficiency, and they're seventh now. So, I mean, this is it's an elite defensive team, and I'm surprised. I mean, in some sense, Mike Woodson's emphasis, you know, that was kind of the constant refrain all offseason, that the defense is the head of the offense. And you can see if you don't defend, you don't play in this team, right? It's like the Christian Lander quandary, right? It's, you know, he's not defending at a high enough level. And I think when in games there have been defensive miscues or defensive mistakes, etc. I mean, I guess on offense, he's sometimes yanked guys as well, but there is a high premium on the type of defense that Mike Woodson wants to play and the level of defense that he wants to play. And like, there's kind of no substitute for that. There's not like well, this guy's not defending at all, but we'll still leave him on the court because of X, Y, and Z. So, but no, at this level, I'm surprised. And I think, you know, the difference between the pack line and look, there's still plenty of season to go. And there were seasons where entering Big Ten play, the pack line and Archie Miller, their defense was pretty good too, right? There was like, I don't remember what season it was. There was a stretch they held a bunch of opponents under a point per possession. And, you know, it was a defense that worked very well against a team like Iowa. That was very perimeter ball movement action, right? But I think the difference between – this is kind of a side tangent on comparing these two defenses. But the difference between these two defenses is the pack line, which, you know, whatever, not here to knock. It can be successful. You know, look at a team like Virginia. Look at some games Indiana played, right? But that is all about, like, you know, pack line, right? Packing it in, packing in the paint, having sort of those four defenders at, you know, the two low post, two high post – and not letting drivers get in at all, right? It's this defense is much different, and that, you know, not that it's some, you know, gimmicky high pressure. We're playing a full court press the whole game, and we're picking, you know, not to say that they don't pick guys up full court on occasion during games, and I think that that's been helpful for this defense too. But they are getting up into defenders more, or into the offensive players more, right? It's obviously they're playing, you know, pretty much exclusively man to man. And I just think there's a different kind of like vibe and energy if you're playing a defense that's like up into players more than kind of hanging back a bit. So that's like a main difference that I think for this group seems to have been fruitful. And then again, using Trace Jackson Davis, and, you know, Race Thompson has had his fair share of blocks this season as well, Jordan Geronimo. I think they're just, because they're not packing it in, if they are getting beat, or if, you know, on some, you know, whatever, pick and roll or a ball screen action or just straight line drives, opponents are getting to the rim, they're also cleaning that up really, really well at the rim. So, that's kind of the differences. And yeah, so far I am surprised that it's at this level. And honestly, you know, it's you know, good for the team that it is at this elite level, because the offense has been shaky at times. And I think, you know, again, it seems like he wants this foundation on defense, and it certainly helped in some of their wins for sure.
Yeah, because if you go over to the other column, there's a bunch of red on the offense. You look at conference only, Indiana 3-point shooting in league play, 28.4%, 44.4% on twos. So they've definitely, the wins that they've gotten, they could very easily be 3-1 or 4-0 in Big Ten play. And it would definitely be because of the defense, because the offense is definitely falling behind. You know, the one thing I will say though, in Big Ten play so far, the turnovers have really come down. Their turnover percentage in Big Ten play only at 14.9%. And tonight, you know, they were really good. They only had 9 turnovers in the game, and they're able to win by 16 despite shooting only 41% from the field. Offensively, just kind of collectively as a team moving forward, what, if any, adjustments do you think they can make to maybe get this offense going in a different direction? I know we talked a little bit about you know, Parker Stewart and Miller Kopp a little bit earlier in the show, but just kind of in general, do you see anything schematically that they could do differently, or is this just a matter of them being able to start making some perimeter shots with a little bit more consistency, and that should maybe kickstart things a little bit?
Well, yeah, first going back to the turnovers, it was interesting. Like, this was a game, I feel like there was such an emphasis on that a little bit earlier in the season in terms of them turning it over, like, you know, over 20% of their possessions for like games on end. And it was kind of a big bugaboo. And I feel like of late, it's not even something I'm not even noticing turnovers in these games, because they've done a really good job of cleaning that stuff up. I think some of it, you know, was that kind of dance between, well, maybe we need to slow things down a bit to not have so many turnovers. But I think tonight's game proved that they were able to play with more pace and not turn it over at a crazy amount. So maybe that's something they can kind of strike a balance with. In terms of offensively, tonight was interesting because, you know, and I think you tweeted that at one point, that they were like one of their last 12 in the second half, and they still had like a 6 or 7 point lead or whatever it was. And I certainly felt like they had a lot of good looks from three that they didn't hit, and kind of same thing with some of the twos that they missed as well. Like, I think there is definitely room for better overall like 3-point shooting in conference. Like, I don't expect them to be shooting under 30% from three. So I think that's one area where if shots can just, you know, fall a little bit stronger. And again, I feel like they're just kind of missing shots more than anything kind of the defense is doing, especially in this game. So yeah, I think, and it goes back to other things we said earlier in this pod, where it's like, they just need other players besides Trayce Jackson-Davis to be a little bit more dynamic. And I think things flow a little bit easier. They can, you know, continue to use Trey Galloway to get out and transition a little bit more. I think these are things that can help them going forward. But I think at this point, it's probably clear that this team is going to be a better defensive team than an offensive team. And it's just about, you know, a little bit of basically improvements around the margins around Trayce Jackson-Davis that I think can help them push through and get wins in a way that I feel like against Penn State, there was too much of a burden on him to try to do things offensively to try to win that game, that it just kind of wasn't in the cards.
Yeah, one thing I haven't mentioned, and one thing we haven't even talked about, because I feel like if Indiana would have come up short in this game, we would be talking about this, is, you know, it's point guard play against Ohio State. You know, you mentioned Trey Galloway as kind of playing the role of a point guard, and in many ways he did do that tonight very well, because you look at what Rob Phinisee and Xavier Johnson, they combined for 4 points on 2 of 13 shooting. Phinisee didn't have an assist. Johnson had 3. So they really got nothing out of either one of those guys. I mean, obviously they both played well defensively, and it was a team effort defensively, but you know, that to me, we've talked so much about how Indiana needs more consistent point guard play, and Galloway definitely stepped up in that regard tonight, and kind of filled the void in terms of what Johnson and Phinisee didn't deliver, at least offensively.
Yeah, I mean, simply put, I just think the point guard play on this team it's been inconsistent and has not been very, frankly, very good. I think you're right. If this is a game Indiana loses, I think that, you know, it's like, oh, you know, the point guards were whatever, 2 of 13 combined, and you know, this point guard play is really like holding us back. I think that I don't know. Obviously, adding this Trey Galloway dimension, I think him being a de facto point guard at time like helps. And you know, again, it's almost like this collective, everyone having a moment here and there could be helpful. I know I'd have to like go back and look at the film. And I know something we were chatting about during the game is there was like that stretch in the second half where Xavier Johnson took a couple long twos, right? And it's kind of like, ugh, that's not like the best shot. I'd be curious because I think part of the, and somebody had mentioned this, a reader had mentioned this in the comments of the Penn State film session, and it's a good point, is that, you know, again, Penn State, the way that they were defending Indiana's point guards and like the ball screen coverage is like they were just doing this drop coverage, which allows the ball handler, the point guard, who's ever getting the screen, there's room in the mid-range to throw a floater up, right? And like this reminds me of like the in the NBA playoffs when like Trae Young, like time and like they the Bucks threw this drop coverage on him in the playoffs, and I think it was one of those really Lopez brothers, Brooke Lopez, and all game as Brooke Lopez dropped, it was in drop coverage, like Trae Young just hit like floater after floater after floater, right? And you know, that I think that's kind of a little bit of the frustration with like Indiana's point guards, who are usually the ones in the ball screen. It's like, again, going back to what I said earlier in the podcast too, like there are counters to what the defense does, and I feel like I'm wondering if I go back and look, like maybe they were defending Xavier Johnson a similar way, and it's like, well, this is what's open, so it's kind of a take what the defense gives you. That said, I think a mid-range jumper from Xavier Johnson is probably not a high percentage look, but it's possible that, again, it's like at least what the defense is giving Indiana's offense. And I think often what they're doing instead is like still trying to drive on this drop coverage. And then it just kind of bungles everything because that's not what's kind of available. And, you know, like against Penn State, Race Thompson was like drawing his man into the lane, and it just created a whole bunch of spacing issues. Right. So I don't really know, like point guard wise, if there's going to be, you know, I think at this point, you know, trying to make Rob Phinisee happen, I think a lot of fans would like to see him play better. I think he in some ways is a real fan favorite, but I think there's enough evidence out here now that, I mean, this season shooting wise, he's just not been good. And I think Xavier Johnson has had some moments, but his shooting percentages haven't been that great either. So again, it's kind of a by committee thing, and there are games that one may be better than the other. In times that they played together, that has made some sense, because I just think there's an experience factor with them, and there's kind of some court awareness with them that has been helpful. But, you know, kind of to wrap this point up, I do feel like the fact that Indiana's point guards just aren't shooting great is like another reason why in conference play they're not shooting very well so far, because their primary ball handlers are not hitting shots.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I got the play-by-play pulled up from the game. And in the first first 2:48 of the second half, Johnson missed four shots. They have these plays tagged on the play by play. One is a missed three. The other three are, missed pull up jumpers. So I don't know if that's a layup or a close shot. I remember one longer two that he took, in the second half. But you know, you mentioned kind of the awareness there, and to me, that's kind of like as a player, you have to know, like, if you're getting that many shots in that short of amount of time, like that's like what the defense is like wanting you to do. And so I think the most frustrating thing to fans about that is just you have other guys that are higher efficiency on the court potentially, and like a Parker Stewart or a Miller Kopp or dumping the ball down to Trace or even Race. And for Johnson to just take those shots, that many of them early in the second half, I mean, I guess in some sense it's on the staff to kind of, you know, let him know that that's not what he should be doing. But from an awareness standpoint, like, he's got to, you know, do something different and not be kind of, we saw it, I think it was in the Wisconsin game too, in the second half, where he took a ton of shots in the second half. And it's like, you keep missing shots continuously like that. He was 0 of 5 tonight in the second half, looking at the box score. And, you know, for the player that's running your team, you've got to be a little bit more locked in terms of decision making. And I think that's really the one thing, you know, that I would say on Xavier Johnson moving forward. I mean, he's does a lot of good things, but just in terms of running the team and getting the offense in a position to find success, I don't necessarily think the best thing is for him to take four shots and miss them all in the first 2:48 of the second half in a game where you really need to win. Win aside, which they did. Now, obviously, I'm not trying to turn this into a negative thing. I'm just saying, just in terms of the point guard play overall, it was a little bit definitely underwhelming overall, at least offensively tonight. And I think a big part of it comes down to the decision-making part of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's all, like, fair. I do. And I think that is also the tricky part of this Indiana offense and why it's has had struggles at times, is because of those things that you point out, right? But it's also, okay, well, go one behind him. Well, Rob Fennessy hasn't really shot well either, and his decision-making at times hasn't been great. And, you know, again, Christian Lander, I think, offers some strengths in terms of, I think, his passing and ability to play out a pick and roll is seen, you know, in his limited time on the court, I think has been good. But obviously defensively, I just think Mike Woodson won't go with him because of that. So it's sort of like, well, this is who Indiana has to play the position, right? And as you said, yes, right, like, the defense is giving that, maybe that mid-range or whatever to him, and it's what they want to give up. So it's tricky in that, like, well, here's how they're being played, so this is all that he's getting out of that, but it's also not the most efficient shot for him, right? So there's that, but I think that goes along to a couple other pieces in Indiana's office, right? Like, Rhys Thompson has been like a rock for this team, in on both sides of the ball, and, you know, the reality is he's playing a lot because he's a great defender and he's got a ton of experience and he knows what he's doing and he's shown an improvement on offense. I think he's got some more skills in the post in terms of scoring and moves and such. But the reality is he's not, you know, there was talk of him being a 3-point shooter this year and doing this 4-out-1-in thing. And yes, he's taken, I don't know, 16 or 17 threes now at this point. And he's only made like 3 or 4 of them. And so he needs to be, I understand why he's getting the minutes he's getting and he should get those minutes. But the type of player that he is on offense also is like contributing to spacing issues at times and his inability, because he's unable to hit that three, or we basically have two post players at the 4 and 5 that really don't have anything else but being able to score in the post, right? So it's kind of one of those things where they are who they are in terms of their strengths on the court or who they are as players. And at times that is not working against Indiana's, like, I don't know, ultimate goals or to their detriment, because defensive, they're being scouted and defensive note kind of knows where to funnel them, how to play them. And there's just like nothing behind either of those players that I think is going to change in terms of, oh, play this guy instead and things are going to change, right?
I agree. And I think this is a good spot for us to leave it. Indiana, huge win. You really can't overstate that. I mean, the record was good, obviously, coming in to tonight. But in terms of the resume, they hadn't accomplished all that much in terms of quality wins. They get a quad one win. They beat a really good Ohio State team that was unbeaten in Big Ten play, ranked in the top 15. Chris Holtmann had really owned Indiana over his first 7 games in Columbus. I think the Buckeyes were 6-1 against Indiana since Holtmann took over. in Columbus. So really good win for Indiana. And Ryan, thank you for the time here, hopping on a little earlier in the evening for you out there out west, but late night for us here. But a really good win again for Indiana. And Ryan, thanks again for coming on the show. And we'll be back, everyone, once again next week with another episode of Podcast on the Brink.